Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, SV Pod. Scott Van Pelt and Stanford Steve bring you high-level sports analysis and stories as two dads raising kids. Plus, find out every Tuesday what they hate, see if you agree. That's SV Pod. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Also, hockey has returned to ESPN. The NHL has started back up, and that means you can stream your team's games on ESPN Plus, from the Stanley Cup champion Tampa Bay Lightning to the brand new Seattle Kraken. Subscribe to ESPN Plus so you don't miss a goal. Also, be sure to follow In the Crease, the ESPN NHL podcast with Linda Cohn and Emily Kaplan. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is Foxworth Friday. Dominique Foxworth, what's going on?
What is up?
Streets tell me you wasn't here for all that Bryce Young love on the get up.
It's not even that I wasn't here for the Bryce Young love. I love Bryce Young. He's a absolutely great college player, but sometimes we go a little too far. I'm guilty of that sometimes too, but my man Dan Orlovsky was out here talking about how Bryce Young is Aaron Rodgers, and I just was like, man. And Dan is as good as it gets to this business, and he's one of the few people whose opinion I respect immediately without having to do like double checks. But on Mondays, he be getting so hot takey on Get Up, coming with the hottest stuff. And it's good for TV. I feel it, but I just ain't built for this. Like, I feel like I'm playing in this system, but I ain't built for this system, because when I hear stuff that sounds absurd, I can't help but roll my eyes. But he knows what he's doing.
So this is my thing with Bryce Young. And by the way, we did see him put on one of the great quarterback performances. He really, really did against that defense. Which, yeah, they had some coverage busts, but the truth is, Bryce Young was putting some balls that I don't know what they were supposed to do on the other side, really. I'm still not there with little bitty quarterbacks.
Yeah.
That's still a difficult thing for me to get with. Like, watching Tua, where he looked like he skipped a grade. You know what I'm saying? Like, when I get out there and I look at that, and I'm like, oh, man, I still don't know. And I guess Bryce Young's going to win the Heisman this weekend, and I don't know about you. The Heisman just doesn't feel like a thing anymore.
Nah, I don't know why either. You're right. When I was a kid, and maybe it was just in general being a kid, and also the world was a little bit bigger, I guess, back then. Now it's so much entertainment. It's like so diffuse in our attention. But I remember caring about the Heisman ceremony and like waiting to watch it. And it felt like at least the sports world was doing that. It doesn't feel like that anymore.
So I think there's a couple things with like where the Heisman has gone and like why I do feel like it's had a bit of a declining significance, shall we say. I think that one thing about it is it was a little cooler when we didn't have all these games on television, right? Like you had to be so cold to hop into our consciousness from a different part of the country back in the day. You know, where you would look and the voting would be so regional and everything else. Honestly, I don't want to say ESPN ruined the Heisman in that way, because that's not fair. But what has happened is standardized national sports coverage has made it to where we used to talk about it like all the way through the year. And then the ceremony comes and we all know who's about to win. Like, you go year to year and try to ask yourself when there's been like any measure of mystery about who the Heisman winner was going to be. And it's because the discussion is so standardized. And then now you got more of these guys than ever to get like 90% of the vote, right? Because everybody has been talked into doing the same thing, because we kind of feed from the same trough in terms of the information when it comes down to voting for all this stuff. Like, I think that there, I think, is a part of it. Beyond that, I don't really have anything, I guess.
Rashawn Salaam. I just remember like when I found out about Colorado football and like, and that your point there is an accurate one, but I think it's fair to say that ESPN did kind of kill it, because you're right. That part of that point is fair. They made it so that the excitement that we had in that one moment, they spread it out over the course of the entire season. So like overall, ESPN has given us much more enjoyment, but you don't get that one, those like few big splashes like, oh, this guy that they talking about finally get his national TV game this week. You know, like you're going to watch and see what's cracking with this guy. And that guy would win or lose the Heisman on that day. But I think that that goes into it. But also, maybe that's why we don't care as much. But and you are a unique case, so this doesn't count for you. But I remember being a kid and like knowing all the Heisman Trophy winners because I remember like the anticipation, like the years long debate and conversation. And then that one big moment made it stick in my memory. Now, you ask me like to name the last five Heisman Trophy winners, I'm like, it's going to take me 30 minutes.
Yeah, the last five for me is a little bit more of a struggle. Like a little bit more. The most recent year where the Heisman just had me like, what are we even doing here? And I also admit, and I've told people this before, my opinion on the Heisman Trophy definitely fell when I found out that Poppy had a vote. When I found out that they sent Poppy a vote, I was like, oh, okay, I don't know what the legitimacy of this is. But when Tua Tagovailoa was the Heisman Trophy winner from the beginning of the season all the way through, didn't have a great game in the SEC championship that Alabama won, that he played in, as I recall, hurt, and we just took the damn thing from him and gave him to Kyler Murray and jump-started his whole career.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I was just like, yo, this doesn't even, like, what exactly is it that we're doing? And I guess the award, to a degree, has always been, like, a little bit nonsensical. I don't know, right? I think, and I also wonder if the Heisman Trophy got less fun now that we don't care about running backs.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
I thought that's where you was going to start.
Yeah, like, the idea that Jonathan Taylor ran for 6,000 yards in 3 years and wasn't famous is kind of bananas, right? Like, 2,000 yards used to guarantee you the Heisman. Like, if you ran for 2,000 yards, you were going to get the Heisman. Jonathan Taylor got 2,000 yards, and he could walk in my front door right now. And if he's wearing a Jonathan Taylor jersey, I'm going to call the cops and say, some strange man in a Jonathan Taylor jersey has just broken into my house. Shoulder pads and everything.
Diversity matters, and it makes it more fun. Even now we're only giving it to quarterbacks, but even back in the day, there'll be different types of quarterbacks. Like Eric Crouch won a Heisman, you know, like, and then we'd have like Cordell Stewart in the conversation. Desmond Howard would win a Heisman. Chris Winkie would win a Heisman. Freaking Ron Dane. Like he was like that made it fun. And then you get like Charles Woodson and Charlie Ward. Like now it feels like you're going to get some quarterbacks. You're going to get some quarterbacks, and they all kind of play this same modern style of, like, athletic quarterback in a spread system type of thing. Lamar Jackson, I guess, is the most unique player that we've had win it in recent memory.
And they're all going to be first-round picks.
Yep.
That wasn't always the case, and it was okay. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, as I think about it, I can go through – let's go back to, like, 07, Tebow won the Heisman. He was a first-round pick. Troy Smith was the year before, and he was not. He was a first-round pick. Sam Bradford, first round pick. Mark Ingram, first round pick. Cam Newton, first round pick. Robert Griffin, first round pick. Johnny Manziel, first round pick. James Winston, first round pick. Marcus Mariota, first round pick. Derrick Henry, poor running back. Not a first round pick, but the virtual equivalent. We just don't do right by running backs. Lamar Jackson, squeaked in, first round pick. Baker Mayfield, first round pick. Kyler Murray, first round pick. Joe Burrow, first round pick. And Devontae Smith. Yeah, our other like outlier.
Yep.
You know, like there we are.
First round picks. Charlie Ward played basketball. Like that's it was not like this when I first got into college football.
Yeah, yo, speaking of Charlie Ward, I want to have a talk with my people about Charlie Ward for a second. Guys, we all gotta be honest here, okay? Charlie Ward is like 5'11", maybe 5'11" and a half. That dude wasn't actually a first-round pick at quarterback. He was a great college quarterback. But when they called the league, it was like, take him in the first round or don't take him. They were like, you ain't said nothing but a word. Charlie Ward would have been a fool if he had gone to play football rather than go get that NBA money and that NBA pension. A fool.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that most football players would, given the opportunity, most people would make that decision to go play basketball over football. Like the benefit of football over other sports is if you are a high pick, which is it's gotten less beneficial in recent years. But if you're a high pick, you get a big signing bonus off the top. And then you got to fight and claw for that next contract to get some more money. Basketball is I mean, you're fighting, but you're fighting in a different way that is a lot less physical than the fighting that you're doing now in football. So, yeah, I mean, to be able to win a Heisman Trophy at 5'11 and be a starting NBA guard at 5'11, like, he is underappreciated for his level of athleticism and impressiveness. It's just great.
People love to play the gotcha games. I am amazed at, like, the thorough way that people can go back and find, like, 15-second snippets of old television shows that ran daily. Like, it blow, like, the people who just sit around ready for the gotcha game blow my mind. So some Arizona Cardinals fan wanted to play the gotcha game with me on Kyler Murray, and he found a clip of me saying, Kyler Murray will never play a down in the NFL. Now, I bet you know the context of when I said that,
exactly.
Right? That was when baseball was throwing money in his face, and a mere month and a half prior, no one was talking about Kyler Murray as an NFL quarterback, right? Like, not a word about that, because a dude his size, we had just never entertained a possibility, right? And I was like, he's never going to play, because my thought was, you're going to go take this baseball money and be good. And then next thing you know, he was the number one overall pick and has turned into a legitimate quarterback. But for me, it was just like, go get this money that doesn't involve getting hit in the kidneys. Like, that was totally my thought about that. If you can make half as much money doing anything else as you can playing football, unless it involves literal coal mining, don't do that.
It's sad but true. I appreciate the guys who play it. I appreciated the opportunity that I could play it, but I could not make half as much doing anything else. So I played it. And I also was young and a little bit crazy.
And you were playing corner, which is not to say that there are not dings and pains that come from playing corner, but it does allow for the option of the business decision in a way that no other position gives you that choice.
I mean, receivers get a little bit, like, they can slide here or there, but sometimes it's not up to them whether they hit or not. There's no other position on the field where it's up to you how you approach every situation. I got cracked on a couple of times when a quarterback was scrambling where it wasn't up to me. But other than that, every other hard hit that I took part in was my choice.
Let me tell you something about playing wide receiver. So I remember I was talking to a woman once. She was an older woman, I guess, at the time. And she was explaining about how, you know, for back in the day when she would go in for job interviews, she never learned how to type on purpose so that they could never make her a secretary. That was her thing. Do not learn to type. Otherwise, they're going to make you a secretary. So she never learned to type for that reason. Man, if I'm a wide receiver, when they're like, hey, we want to see how you look running that post route. What's that? I've never heard of a post route. What is a dig route? So I'm supposed to run and then go inside? No, we didn't run that at my last school. No, I've never heard of that. No, let me show you the route that I run. I believe you guys call it a nine.
Just all goes, comebacks, and outs. That's it.
Yes, that's it.
You're running all the odd number routes on the route tree. All the outbreaking joints. Give me threes. That's it. Threes, sevens, nines. That's all we are doing. You can keep your eights.
Yes. No.
You can keep all of that.
No, look, the kids don't know nothing about this. Like, the real youngsters, because you think about this. There is nobody in the league right now whose calling card is going over the middle, right? Like, there's no Michael Irvin who's just absolute calling card, his willingness to go over the middle. And a lot of people that you may not have heard of or you've heard of and don't know of, but they decided that they were going to make their names by willing to be decapitated in the name of football. So the Bears used to have this receiver named Tom Waddle. I believe Tom does the radio in Chicago right now. You might be wondering, oh, how'd that white man get on the radio? Because he was a wide receiver. He really was. And he should have been doing commercials for Smelling Salt. Because they would send that dude over the middle, and he would get his rock, and they just show him on the sideline. And after a point, that damn, what you call it, that Smelling Salt in his face, he's looking at them like, yo, why is this chalk in front of me? Like, he couldn't even smell it no more.
I mean, the game has changed now. You can run these routes with a little bit more safety than you could in the past, but there is still that chance. I mean, it's not good. You may not get knocked out in the way that you were in the past, but you're still gonna get hit. It still ain't gonna feel good. Like, it might be in your ribs rather than your head, which is a short-term pain over the long-term impact, but still don't feel good.
The culture change I do think that the NFL has instituted is dudes aren't out there just trying to destroy people.
Right.
Like, not in the way that it used to be. Like, you see them, hit them with the shoulder or whatever. Like, guys like to still get a good hit in. But, man, them sociopaths that used to be out there, like, what am I here to do? Terrify people. That's my whole job. The 12th defender is fear.
The culture of the game has shifted. in that I think we talked about this before. I was dumb enough when I was like 8 years old. Like I was best athlete in my little area, obviously. And so like I was best basketball player for a while until like I got to middle school. There were some better basketball players, but like I could have chosen whatever I wanted to choose as far as sports are concerned. But I was like, no, I'm play football because I'm a man. Like that's what men play. And that's what it was all about. It's like you wanted to impose your will on people. And that's still kind of the case, but it's very different now. Whereas part of the game was trying to hurt people and not in a legal way. Like you come back and you celebrate it when you knock somebody out. Like I'm in high school and that's what I was looking to do. Playing safety. I was out there looking to put people out of the game, then come over to the sideline because another 16-year-old kid is laying motionless, and I'm high-fiving. Like that, to think about that in today's game, it's unthinkable. And that like cultural and psychological shift that we've seen the NFL lead, frankly, has been kind of surprising.
Did you see that play? I think it was either in the Sunday night game or the Monday night game, but they called a defender for like a crackback or like a blind block on an interception return. Mm-hmm. And by the letter of the law, yes, you know, this was against the rules. But do you remember when Warren Sapp de-cleated Chad Clifton on one of those, right? And this was head on swivel era, right? Like it's your responsibility to stop yourself from being destroyed. And Sapp after the game, and just so you understand, when I say de-cleated him, he broke his pelvis. Just so you get the magnitude of what this was. And his thing was clean hit. And even the people who hated Warren Sapp, which were not hard to find at that time, were like, yep, clean hit. That was what it was. Was it a necessary hit? No. Chad Clifton was not going to make a play on that interception. It was merely an opportunity to take his ass out. And he did. Y'all see that no more.
That's what we did on defense. Like you were defensive players were excited about that opportunity like that. You were looking for punt returns. You were looking for blindside blocks. You were aiming for people's ear hole and launching your body into it. And then you get up and celebrate. And like now, even that one you're talking about, I remember seeing it. The player seemed hesitant, like was kind of like iffy about it because like his whole life, frankly, yeah. Except for like the last like few years, because this crackback blindside block is a new rule, I think. 2 years ago that they instituted that? 3 years ago? So you could see his mind was telling him no, but his body was telling him yes. And like that is shocking to me when I really sit back and think about it. And when you see these hits happen, I now react in a way that is very different where I like cringe now and I think about it now. Whereas before, I'm like, ooh, it's more of a celebration.
At once, I kind of miss it.
Oh, yeah.
But also recognize can't be.
You can't. I mean, I think this is a sentiment that animates a lot of the worst things that take place in this country is you remember how things used to be. And because that's how it was when you were growing up, you're like, man, that was better. Those was good times. I think that is the same could be true about the violence in football. Whereas we can remember how fun it was, but that don't mean it was better. You know, like this is definitely better what we're doing now.
Yeah, entertainment, you know, is a balancing act. It's a balancing act. You been on this NBA any this year?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I can't really fully engage until after Christmas and then especially after the NFL playoffs, but I've been keeping abreast.
I have been watching something that's happening in Portland, which is interesting, right? Because they just fired the general manager for a toxic workplace. And now all of a sudden we hear things about Dame Lillard that we had not heard before.
Right.
Right. Now all of a sudden people realize Dame Lillard don't play defense. Now all of a sudden the story is going from Dame is carrying everything to, well, what's Dame's part in this whole here situation? Yeah. They got the head coach who got a 5-year contract, so I guess they got to keep him, but he was hired by the general manager. Dame thought that he was going to get the super extension because he was cool with the general manager. Everything up there just went, and it's wild because nothing has actually changed about Damian Lillard. You know what I mean? Like, the context has changed because people decided to start writing different things about him, and now he's just up there, and he's still talking that, I don't want to trade. And I'm like, I don't understand why you do not.
I understand, like, his relationship with O'Shea was, like, strong, but from what I understand, Dame didn't want Billups. Like, he wanted an experienced coach. So, like, that seemed like – so I guess that's kind of confusing to me because it seemed like they were linked in a way. O'Shea and Dame were linked in a way that seemed like they were on the same page. But the things that Dame wanted, like improvement in the roster or some significant roster changes, they didn't do that. He wanted Jason Kidd, from what I understand. They didn't do that. So, like, when I first heard about the O'Shea firing, I guess I was wondering if this is about Dame or what the next chapter is going to be about Dame having the power to do the things that he wanted to do. But it doesn't seem like it. It seems like they fired him because of the misconduct. Because I got to be honest, my initial thought was when I saw him being fired, I was like, oh, this because they're not giving Dame what he wants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's... there's a lot there. The owner died. His sister runs it. The owner loved the team. The sister doesn't really care. Like, it's just kind of a thing for them to do. They're just, you know.
Yeah.
It's one of those where, like, wow, imagine if this were happening, like, in a different time zone. You know what I mean? Like, what if this was happening somewhere where we pay more attention in a bigger place or whatever it is? Because that's part of the thing with Dame is we just pop in when you do good things.
That's fair. The criticism Dame would be receiving if he was the Knicks point guard for this entire run would be very different than the criticism that he receives being out there in Portland. As we look in when he hit a game winner, or when he hit 9 threes in a game or something like that, we don't analyze him the way that we would if people actually had expectations of this team, which remarkably, they don't have the same expectations as they do of some East Coast teams with a lot less talent.
Yeah. I think he's ultimately going to wind up in New York. Like, one way or another, they're going to get it done and they're going to get him here. My thing with Dame, though, when I look at it and I get where he's coming from, because he done talked this for so long that he got to walk it, is, yo, man, you should be asking for a trade. Like, I know you already locked into all this money that they, you know, so it's not the easiest contract in the world. But I do look at these cats at some point, and not even on some, like, loyalty's overrated thing, is that sometimes you got to walk this out as to where it's going to go. And do you actually think, if the title is the thing you want or whatever, like, yo, I want to do it here. I bet you do. Can you do it here? Because the answer looks like it's no, right? At which point, you just kind of got to be the person just to be like, yo, man, I got to dip.
It's hard to be the person who's so close to it. And I've thought about this with Dame and McCollum for a while. It's because I know Dame wanted Simmons, which is, if they're going to keep Dame and get Simmons, McCollum's going to have to be part of that deal.
Yes.
So, like, when you are so powerful that you are the organization, which, like, Dame is there. Like, he, when you say Trailblazers, you think of Dame before you think of anyone else. He's the face of it. And so you carry this weight around with you. You carry this pressure to, like, influence and make decisions. And when you affix yourself to an organization the way that he has, like, not like LeBron, because LeBron has always been his own entity since he came in the league. In part, why we think of Dame the way we do is because of that loyalty speech he gave and he stood by. But I think there's nothing wrong with changing your mind. I change my opinion all the time. It's okay. Like, I was wrong. I said what I said because I thought the way I thought back then. I'm older now, more mature. I'm more worldly. I have a new opinion based on the facts that I've been presented. I want to do what's best for me. I've given them all I could. I got to go. Nothing's wrong with that.
No. And nobody will be mad at you at that point, right? Like, the folks in Portland, man, they know what time it is. And the other thing that'd be happening, like, with a team like Portland, is they mess around and they look at you and they looking at the rest of the team and they're like, you know, the only way that we're going to get any good is if we trade Dame.
I think that's probably the best thing for everybody. Like, it's clear that experiment is not going to, I'm not going to say it's not going to work, because it works. It's not going to win a championship.
No.
If that's what anybody is in it for, then both of them are better off going somewhere else to win a championship. Dame has a better chance if he goes to, I guess, Philly would be the best circumstance for him to win a championship. And it might be the best circumstance for Portland to start rebuilding, because you're not going to get a player back that is as good as Dame. The best player that you possibly could get right now is Ben Simmons. And if you want to rebuild, maybe the other way to go is just take someone's draft picks, all their draft picks, into perpetuity. That might be the only other way to do it, and just cross your fingers and hope that some 19-year-old comes up in a couple years that you really got to have.
Well, the other thing in that for me, though, is he is not playing well. Like, that is, I think, another fascinating element of this, is that we have reached a point where we're looking at him and we like, hey, man, what's up? Because he didn't play well in the Olympics. Like, a lot of these guys who went to the Olympics came back and didn't play well. But at the same time, while those guys who went to the Olympics didn't play well, the younger guys did okay, right? Like Devin Booker's come back. He's been all right. We can go through a few more of those. Like the younger dudes came back. Them cats, them like early 30 dudes, they coming back like, yo, man, it's been a long year, man.
And I mean, he's not going to provide you any asset on the other side of the ball. He's always going to be a minus on defense. Like, yes. It goes back to the small quarterback conversation, like a small guard. I mean, you're going to have trouble on the defense side of the ball, especially a small guard who you ask a lot of on the offensive side. So, like, he's putting up the same amount of shots as he always has. Less of them are going in. Everybody's foul numbers are down, so he's going to the line less. His three-point percentage is significantly lower. So, yeah, like, you ain't going nowhere with Dame playing all-pro level Dame or all-NBA level Dame. You definitely ain't going nowhere with this version of Dame. It's time to blow it up.
Yep. You mentioned Jason Kidd a little bit earlier. He down there coaching Luka, and you see they done kind of got into it. Not even into it, because Luka seems to be dealing with it, but Jason Kidd is like, yo, stop whining to the refs, fat boy. Like, real talk. He's like, yo, you came in here out of shape. That's got to stop, and ain't nobody ever got a call from the refs just because they was whining. Stop that.
Yeah. He told him that his feeling, or I think it was Ramona said this on the jump, how she talked to Kid and Kid said, nobody likes you. Like behind closed doors, he told him, like, nobody likes you. Like around the league, people don't like you. And like that, no one's going to give you the benefit of the doubt in these calls if they don't like you. And she was implying that it was about more than just the refs, but also the refs don't like you. But then in the very next segment on the show, Richard Jefferson said that he's fifth in the league trips to the free throw line, but he's fourth in the league for techs. So like that is a recipe for the refs not to like you. Like we send you to the line, the fifth most out of everybody, and you still out here getting on our nerves. Like, yeah, that's even if you're right, like the refs, you can't expect the refs to have 100% hit rate. Even if you're right on every complaint, you got to watch other games. Do he not have league pass? Watch other games and watch how many times other people get fouled, superstars get fouled and don't get the call. Like you got to kind of grow up some, which is a weird thing to say about someone who's been a professional basketball player since he was, 16?
Yeah, but he in that place, though. Like what you're saying is absolutely correct. Like he is going to have to like just be a different dude. Like at some point, he's been really, 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 really good, and he doesn't have a lot around him, right? Like, it's hard to make a criticism of him. Like, every team I watch him on, he takes all the shots because he's the coldest thing in Slovenia. He's the coldest thing in Dallas, right? Like, he's the guy that dominates everything. I can't tell whether it's because he wants to or simply because it has to be done, right? Like, I don't know which one it is. But, man, people going to start coming for you at some point just if it's like, I don't like you, man. We don't like your get down. Jason Kidd does not like his get down. And they hired him because he's supposed to be the guy to deal with Luka. And he was like, yeah, I got you. And I'm going to tell you, like, hit a reel, homie. It can't be that.
Being a manager of any group, which is what a head coach is, like, you're a manager. And you're trying to manage these people while also implementing a strategy. And, like, we talked about this a bunch before when we were talking about the Cam Newton stuff. Is like, you got to understand how to deal with a situation. And I think that it doesn't seem very different from what I understand about who Rick Carlisle was. Like Rick Carlisle came across to me as like a more direct guy. That relationship didn't work out in the long run. So I'm surprised that when I heard they brought in Jason Kidd, they're bringing in Jason Kidd. My expectation was Jason Kidd was going to be a different version. And maybe he tried that. He was like, Jason Kidd was going to be, I was the best point guard in the NBA at one point. You can be that. I'm going to be your guy, you know, but maybe he tried that at first and he's realizing, no, this dude needs some, he needs some tough love, which I think is probably consistent with somebody who's been a star from the time that they could shoot a basketball, which is one of the most remarkable things about LeBron. It's like LeBron's ability to understand the entirety of the game is surprising to me, given the fact that he got so much attention for being so great so early on. But Luka is like, we can only beat around the bush but so much before we got to, like, give you the real. And what you said, yeah, get back on defense, fat boy. Like, that's stop complaining. You got to work.
That is what the man said. Cut that out. There we are. And I want to see how it all goes with him, because clearly he kicks it way too hard in the offseason. Clearly he kicks it too hard, because they asked him about it and he was like, yeah, I had a busy offseason because he played in the Olympics. But like when Melo played in the Olympics, Melo come back in the best shape of his life. Luka Doncic don't look like he played any basketball all summer. How is that possible when your story is, you know, I was playing basketball all summer?
I mean, I don't want to call it an old man game, but like you don't look to him for explosive athletic moves. So like even though he's playing basketball, like it's not like he's not running wind sprints. He's not, you know, like his style of play is, maybe I'm interpreting it as more technical than it actually is because of how he looks. But like, It doesn't seem like he ever thrived on being athletic. He thrived on being uniquely skilled for his size, you know,
yes,
and having vision and that sort of stuff. And that ain't something that requires you to be in tip top physical condition. It's like how a great player gets old. And like you see Kobe found a way and Jordan turned to the fadeaway jumper. It's like his game was already there and he never had to get that explosive fitness that you would expect him to have. And he's always had the offensive load. So people cut you some slack on defense, because defense, it's about thinking, but it's also about being quick. You got to be quick on defense.
Yeah, but you can't be out of shape. Like, like it's one thing to be like, you ain't got to be out here looking like Jack LaLanne. You know what I'm saying? Like you ain't got to be Charles Atlas, but you can't be out of shape.
You can if you're Luka. If you got to step back, you know, if you 6 inches taller than most of the people who are guarding you, and you can pass through the eye of a needle, then being physically fit and nobody asks you to play defense, being physically fit is low on the list of priorities.
Yeah, I hear you. At the same time, like for me, I just feel like playing an NBA game while you out of shape just feels miserable.
I mean, I have no idea. I can't imagine doing that. It's a level of technical proficiency that he must have. It causes him to expend a lot less energy than you would suspect, because it doesn't look miserable when he's doing it. But I think that that's part of the problem is people are like, when he came into the league, there was a lot of hype, and then he played really well and the hype continued. So like, can you imagine, like, Bomani, let's say somebody off the street come up to you and start trying to explain to you how you should handle your career. Mm-hmm. Start telling you these things that you need to do. You're going to be like, but I've been doing it this way. It is working out just fine. About to have my own HBO show. Like, I imagine that Luka might feel the same way. People coming up to Luka like, get in shape. I'm all NBA already, and I'm just a puppy. How about you worry about doing what you do better? Like, I can understand that sentiment. If I was ever that good, and I was a great football player in the grand scheme of the world, but if I was ever that good at anything, it'd be real hard to tell me anything.
Yeah, and that's what Jason Kidd is for, right? Like, yeah, that's the Jason Kidd job, is to come in here and do that. And it's almost like if you ain't going to listen to Jason Kidd, it just ain't going to happen.
Right. Yeah, you're going to learn the hard way.
Yeah, like if you're not going to listen to Jason Kidd, then you're just not that guy. And okay, I got it. And look, I ain't like the Jason Kidd, like I love this guy dude at all. Mm-mm. But he is Jason Kidd.
He knows a little something. Jason Kidd purposely spilled a drink on the floor as the coach in order to buy himself some more time.
Dedication. So,
that is a level of commitment and dedication that you can expect from him. So all he wants Luka to do is work out a little bit and stop complaining. Like,
yes,
I'm willing to go as far as knocking some Gatorade on the floor so we could get an extra timeout. All you got to do is run some wind sprints in the offseason and also get back on defense and stop complaining.
Yeah, yeah, now you're right. Man, the NBA this year, it's actually really interesting, and you've got like as much competition across the league as I can think of, and I just don't know if anybody cares.
Yeah. At least for me, like the casual NBA fan, I'm not like a super fan of one team or even like a super, super fan of the league. If I think back to the times when I'm most engaged in basketball, it's not when there's parity. Like when the Warriors were running roughshod all over the league, I wouldn't miss a game. When LeBron was in Miami that first year and the second year, I did not miss a game of that. When KD went out to the Warriors, I didn't miss a game of that. Like, I'm talking watching 70 games of one team, like start to finish. I was engaged. And like, NBA is obviously a star-driven league in a way that football just is not, in the way that baseball is not. It's kind of like boxing in that you show up when the stars are there, or MMA or fighting in that way. And I think that it's just the way that the league works. Like, I care about those big dominant teams. I don't want to, but I do. Like, these cute Cinderella stories, like, I don't want to call Chicago cute, but it's like unexpected, right? That don't make me want to turn the TV on. It make me like, puts a little smile on my face. Oh, that's nice. They got together some guards out there that's doing their thing. They ain't gonna win the title, but that's all right, you know? But like, when I turn on, what gets me to turn on the TV is Steph's on the run, or Giannis is doing his thing. I'll turn on for that. And I don't feel that right now, even though Phoenix balling. It just doesn't pull me, as if when you have one team that everybody is chasing, and either everyone loves them or everyone hates them. Like, that is the storyline historically for me that gets me engaged in basketball. And right now, the parity, that like the football-esque parity that all leagues say that they want, it feels like the NBA has something close to it this year. It's not as engaging as it would be if we was all chasing LeBron again.
Yeah, and I think for me, like what you talk about there, what I think the league doesn't have now that I don't think that we talk enough about is there are no rivalries as of now, right? Like, there's no beef. Nobody got no real beef with nobody. There's no games that you circle because you're like, oh, man, they're going to be going hard in that game. Right. Like, we don't have that element of it. Like, there were rivalries that existed, and it was not simply about we're in a playoff series right now.
Right.
You know, there was like some real interpersonal engagement. And this is something that our man Howard Bryant talks a lot about, which is guys are not attached to franchises like that anymore. And that is in large part like our era of player empowerment, and a very good thing, right? Like, the idea that they aren't in that place. But it also does make things a little bit less fun, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think that we would all agree upon that. It does make things a little bit less fun when that happens. And so as a result, the cats don't care about the franchises in that way. And so the battles between the franchises don't go across in the same way. And dudes aren't sticking around as long, which is, you know, for good reasons, by and large, that they're not around as long. But like LeBron James, like Howard mentioned this, he's not attached to any sort of team or whatever it is, right? But like, when you think about like if the Celtics and the Sixers are going to play, like, yeah, that's a rivalry really from 40 years ago, but there's no rivalry element to it now. Like, is there any rivalry anywhere in the East right now? I don't see it.
I mean, and I think a lot of that energy that you're talking about has gone to the players in their own individual camps. So the beef that we used to have between franchises are within franchises now. Like, more often we read about rivalry or tension between the organization, the GM and the star. Like, those things come up, rivalry between two players on a team. Like, not that these things didn't happen in the past, but because guys were tied to an organization longer, like, the rivalry, the relationships built up and were strong there, because leave here, like, you don't even, like, it's not even an option. Like, this is what we got. And then the tension builds up with someone else. But in this case, it's like the players have more in common with each other and they have less in common with the organization. And I think more often than not, they look at each other like, hey, he's like me. You know who's not like me? This guy who's about to trade me, or this guy who don't want to sign me. And they start to realize how much power they have. And that's where the rivalry is. And that's fun to read about, but that don't make you want to turn on a game. Like, you know, like potentially having the Knicks and Heat have a brawl like in the 90s, like that's going to make me turn this thing on. But the star of the team being upset with the GM, I'll read an article about it, share it with my friends, but I'm not going to watch. You know, nothing's going to happen on the court.
Yeah, like, I mean, my man Jokic is out here dominating the league. Nobody watching, nobody cares.
Nope.
Like, it's just there. Nobody is really interested in it. I also wonder if part of what happens, like, when we talk about, like, this part of the season with the NBA, we are so football-focused, and I think that there was a different time where people felt like the way they program stuff, like program television, they almost needed to be, like, equal space or kind of things. So, like, okay, let's make sure we get basketball enough run. Nah, baby, y'all want some of these Cowboys?
I'm on Get Up, as you know, 2 times a week, and that's a daily show. And I do feel like they, because of the rights that we have as a network, I feel like we at Get Up feel like some pressure to make sure we're properly promoting and sharing the right stuff. But when it comes down to the come down, And it's those big competitive moments in time in the day. And we trying to win that portion of the ratings. We are going with football. Football and more football. If Jerry Jones said something remotely interesting, we are talking about the Cowboys. And as much as people complain about it, the numbers suggest that they love it. It just time and time again, a midseason basketball game, even with big name stars, is going to get more people to change the channel than us talking about what Jerry Jones said on a radio show 3 days after a game and 4 days before the next one. Like it's amazing how this country has a love affair with football. It's a uniquely American game, and boy, does it have a hold on this country.
Yeah, it is. And as a result, we're not giving you but so much. You know what I'm saying?
It backfires. But I mean, the conversations in football, I think also the schedule in football and the conversations lend themselves to becoming as popular as it is. Because like you have a game, and that game is a referendum for the week. And then that game fuels everything going forward. Basketball is like, you got a game, then you got one the next night. And they might have looked like trash last night, but they look great tonight. So what are we going to say? You know, like we got a 12-hour window where people are awake and they have not yet played a game for us to discuss these opinions before the opinions change. But I mean, one of the football conversations that I don't think we did enough this week that I liked was the Lamar Jackson stuff. Like, what's wrong with Lamar? And obviously no one's dumb enough to say that they figured him out, but their offense is not very good right now. And so there's one camp of people that's like, all right, well, they're completely decimated by injuries and they're a run-based offense with no running back. So like, this is what you should expect. And then there's another group that's like, all right, well, Lamar is struggling. So that's the problem. Those things can be connected. But I kind of came to a different thought is like, when you watch those most recent games, it's hard because Lamar is unique. Lamar sits in the pocket as in a way that reminds you of the quarterbacks of the 90s. Like he's comfortable staying in there. You might even argue that he holds onto the ball too long or stays in the pocket too long. And his issue with passing the ball was with accuracy up until recent games where it feels like his issue is not with accuracy, it's with decision-making. But then I rewatch all his bad plays and it feels to me somewhat like this offense is looks a bit sloppy in part because you don't want to put restrictions on somebody like that. And you want to give him the freedom to do things. So like, I'm watching him get blitzed and it keeps going through my mind. Like there's the hot read right there. Like I see him, he's wide open, throw it to him. Why don't you throw it to him? And then I look at the Miami game where he did do that the entire game. He got rid of it when he was under pressure. And that's what Miami wanted him to do. It's like a basketball strategy in that you're the best player. We're going to get it out your hands as quick as possible. And so that's what they were doing. And he played into it. Then I watched the Cleveland game where, all right, the blitz is getting there and he backpedals and backpedals and backpedals and throws up a prayer to Mark Andrews and Mark Andrews catches it. Then he does it again in the Steelers game and it's an interception. It kind of, to me, feels like if you have a quarterback who's limited, you want to prescribe everything for them. If you have a quarterback who is a home run hitter like Lamar, you got to take some strikeouts too. Every now and then you're going to get a strikeout with it. You just have to be comfortable with it being that ugly. And they've already overachieved. It's time that we celebrate the season that they've had, because I don't think it's going to get much better than it's gotten up until now.
It is pretty impressive that it's gotten as good and as far as it has, given how decimated they were. Because I did think it was interesting watching the discussion that you guys were having on television, because it seemed to be like the understanding was, hey, man, Lamar ain't getting it done right now. Like at this moment, he's not the dude that's getting it done. But this is only relevant because he got it done so much up until this point. It is almost a blessing and curse, right? Like if he hadn't got it done all year, then we'd go back on it and be like, well, yeah, man, you know, they got all this stuff, da, da, da. But nah, dog, you actually showed us you could do it without them cats.
Yeah. And
now
and
then, we want Mo.
And they even managed to win with him playing poorly. Like the game he missed, they won against Chicago. Lamar was there. Then the next game against the Browns, Lamar threw like three interceptions in a 3 minute period. Like, and his best plays were wish balls that he threw to Mark Andrews and they managed to win. And then last week they almost won again on a last second drive. Like these things aren't going to keep going your way. And then they lose the best player on their defense. And if Marlon Humphrey on a secondary that's already depleted. Like, that's why I was saying, like, we should celebrate what they've done and stop expecting them to continue to do this. It's hard for me to imagine that they're going to keep winning these last second games. But then again, I've seen it happen so many times with Lamar. So we'll see going forward. I do bristle a little bit at the idea that people want, and I have this reaction sometimes too, people want Lamar to take the easy answer or play like other quarterbacks play, when it's kind of like, no, that's not what you want. And that, it kind of links to LeBron in that, and early in his career, people were like, hey, don't pass out of the double team when the game is on the line. I kind of feel like that about Lamar too, where it's like, all right, I know they're blitzing you. I know they got a free rusher. And I know that Hollywood Brown is in the flat and you can get it to him and hope he do something. But I also know that Lamar can make one person miss. And if he makes that one person miss, Lord help us all. We got a highlight. We're going to be playing on SportsCenter for years to come.
Dude, I remember when Michael Vick, who was out here, like, he's going to be better than me, right? And he was talking about in college. And in college, yeah, that's just an absurd thought to me, whatever it is. But he's going to be better than me. He was just so adamant about that he's better than me. And I was just like, you know, I know Michael Vick always got to say the right thing. You know what I'm saying? He's not allowed to be like, hold on, Woody. I know you're getting ratty, but watch my feet, right? Like, I understand that he doesn't have that option of generally doing right. that. Man, I've been watching Lamar this season, and I'm like, oh, his athleticism, I actually had undersold. Because Vic's like 5'11", 6 foot, right? Like, he looked much more like a running back. And so when he gets it going and he's breaking it down and stuff, it was a different animal. Lamar's like 6'3", right? More spindly, with sinewy. That's the word they like to use. And I'm just like, nah, it's not possible that dude is like faster and more athletic and a better runner than Michael Vick. But my bad. I was incorrect.
In a league with better athletes, like, the game changed since Vic was in the league to have more athletic. And you and Howard were talking about this. There was a time when there were a bunch of big burly linebackers and safeties that were only in the game to smash people. And then the game pivoted towards the pass because you're going to take advantage of these big monstrosities. And then Vic comes in the league that's more like that. And so he is going up against athletes that are built to stop this hard-nosed rushing attack when he is much faster and more athletic than them. So Lamar comes into a league that is full of guys at linebacker that would have played safety 15 years ago. And so, and then the safeties are like hybrid corner safeties. They have a higher level of athleticism. And then you get these rush ends. And like, Aaron Donald is the best defensive tackle in the league. Aaron Donald, if you saw him with his shirt off, you would not say that he was a defensive tackle. You're not looking at Sam Adams out there. Like, that is the difference in the game. And Lamar is out there making them boys look like they're unathletic. Like, yes, Vic, maybe he was just saying the right thing, or maybe he was being honest, but he was right. Like,
yeah,
Lamar Jackson actually cracks a playbook every now and then, which I think
that's the big one.
He wasn't messing with that.
That's the big one. I will say this. The last thing to ever say about Michael Vick, this is not NFL observation, but for those of you who did not watch the Sugar Bowl in January 2000 live, I just can't explain to you like what it was, because we did not have GIFs. We did not have the ready availability of highlights. Michael Vick was fourth in the Heisman voting as a freshman, but we still were kind of like, what's going on? Virginia Tech, they're in the national championship game. They say they've got this really good quarterback. What's that all about? And that dude took on a vintage Florida State team, and for three quarters they had the lead because he just put the entire squad. That dude made two people tear their ACLs in a football game. Not like, you're about, man, I'm breaking ankles. The dude tore two knees up in the game. It really happened. Like, think some of the man, cats was out there tearing the ACLs. You'd be like, yo, no, that really happened.
Yeah, like, yeah, it was literally breaking ankles, but not ankles, man, it's tearing ligaments.
Yes.
That is a real thing that was happening against the best team in college football. Yeah.
It was
incredible.
Yes. But hey, ladies and gentlemen, that is Dominique Fosworth. Check him out on Get Up. Check him out on Debatable. Check him out on The Undefeated. Fosworth Friday, every Friday, here on The Right Time. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this three times a week. Gabe Bassan and Dave Presley handling everything behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you're a hater. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.